and WRHU welcome you to the One World of Community Radio.
Radio 89.5 FM Bush Radio in Cape Town, South Africa. 88.7 FM WRHU Radio, Hofstra University in New York. A continuation to the One World Radio team from Bush. Coming to New York to experience the American presidential elections in 2024. We spoke last week about what the experience of the team was first arriving in New York and having a chance to see America as people in this country prepared for a historic election between what we now know will be the incoming president, Donald Trump, versus his now defeated candidate, Kamala Harris. Very interesting episode last week talking about perspectives, and we're going to continue that discussion this week. So, hey, guys, you're down in Washington, D.C. First of all, let's talk about your experience in D.C. What did you think about our nation's capital in the United States?
It is absolutely amazing. I'm enjoying D.C. I've been doing a lot of sites. Like there's so much deep history in this site. Like I'm really enjoying it. It's absolutely beautiful. I don't know, what about you guys?
In Washington DC, I actually started noticing how people were commuting to work on these scooters and electric bicycles. I found it very odd where I actually saw people wearing suits and these jerseys, like actually on their way to work. It's strange, but okay. Oh, yes. And also, I had the experience of being on one of the scooters. I almost got into an accident, the poor bystander. but she's okay. She's okay. I did stop next to her and ask if she's fine. But other than that, it was fun. I wish we had that back home. I'm going to miss it so much.
You can always throw a few of them in your luggage and take them on the plane. I'm sure they won't.
Don't tempt me, Andy. Don't tempt me.
Well, we have to try and get Jasmine's luggage into her bag first.
Oh, I'm sure. Did Jasmine do a little shopping while you guys were over here?
Yes, a lot actually. So oh. You're gonna have to be posting some goods to South Africa.
Nope. Yes, no problem.
But what I also notice around Washington, for instance, is like when we interviewed the people in New York, they are very friendly, and New Yorkers get the rap of they're not friendly people. And that is what some of the people stated that we interviewed. But once we got to Washington, and I was like, no, these are the people that's not friendly. Like, yeah, so New Yorkers is friendly. And what they also stated was that the whole environment or the sectors and so forth, it's basically a scam at the end of the day, and it's true.
No, you bring up a very good point. People, the misconception about New Yorkers is that New Yorkers are unfriendly. It's not that New Yorkers are unfriendly. We're just very busy. New Yorkers are actually very friendly people. And when you come to New York City loves when you come and visit. It's the people that aren't from New York that I think are unfriendly, that either move to New York City or are staying for an extended period of time. Those are the people that get very overwhelmed and they don't have time to talk to anybody. But for New Yorkers like myself, when you come and check out our city, we're excited to have you. So I'm glad you guys noticed that when you were.
Yeah, I mean, culturally, I think that's a little bit of a shock for us that somebody would say, no, I'm busy right now, or they'll jump in to help you. I think that's something we can actually take back to Cape Town, because, you know, everybody's overly accommodating sometimes. But here it's like, okay, I'm busy with this. I can't help you right now. It's straightforward. It's to the point. There's no what we would call beating around the bush, I suppose. It's to the point. I personally loved that about New Yorkers.
I think you guys just came up for a great new show for the radio station. Call it Beating Around the Bush on 89.5 FM. This could be a whole new thing. How to become straightforward. Now that you have been here for 2 weeks and you've seen, I mean, you had a front row seat to this election cycle. What were some of the reactions of people the day after? You know, you guys went down to Washington the day after the election Wednesday morning, and you got a chance to get some feedback. And I think your perspective is very important, because you're looking at this, I think, a little differently than Americans are looking at it, because at the end of this whole thing, you guys go home. We have to stay here and kind of deal with the fallout or the you know the progress that happens when the results are in. So what were some of the comments or reactions you got from people that were down in DC?
And that part was so interesting to see because, yes, we are here in Washington and we basically cover the elections and so forth. So at the end of the day, for us, we go back to South Africa where we basically go back to our reality and live with our personal problems. But listening to the people and how they basically spoke out about what they went through, it's sad. It's touching. It's heartfelt. You can actually feel what the people basically stated because they don't know what tomorrow basically holds for them. And some of the people stated they don't know if they're going to stay here or do they need to go back to their home countries. Like, what is the way forward from there on? And that is just so sad that you need to feel that way. And even the people, the homeless people living on the street, we spoke to them also. And just hearing what they also had to say, like their backstory of how they actually ended up the street on the street and so forth. It's, I won't say fascinating because at the end of the day, it's very sad what they're going through and the way government is not supporting them and trying to provide these resources to assist them. So yeah, that is the reality at the end of the day. The citizens of America needs to go back and live in this reality that they are in, which is very uncertain.
This election was unusual in the fact that the mandate that was handed down from the voters really does take a position, at least in the presentation of the way the vote kind of worked itself out, that Americans are unhappy with a couple of things. Number one, obviously, the economy was a big factor affecting the election, which is unusual because in the last 4 years, we had to clean up a big mess after COVID-19. So dealing with that, I think we're finally seeing some stabilization. So the fact that the economy didn't improve quicker, I think, made a lot of people vote the way they did. We also saw a lot of sentiment in this country for, I think the best word could be xenophobia or a fear of outsiders, that a lot of Americans are concerned that with new faces coming into the United States, it is creating an issue with the amount of resources that are being spent dealing with immigrant populations, migrant populations, and I think a lot of Americans were concerned about that. Was that part of the overall perception or the reactions that you had from people that were in favor of the outcome of the election, or what were for people that were satisfied with the results, what was their feeling about that you were able to kind of get from your discussions with them?
Yeah, I think I mentioned it in the previous interview we've done that I think we were surprised at certain people and their political views. Like, we made assumptions. I think as journalists and as media people, we made assumptions. I did personally notice the day after the elections, just walking around because I both here and back home, I suppose you could consider me racially ambiguous. So I did notice a little bit of a switch with some people.
Definitely.
Sort of a few days before that, they were very friendly, and then suddenly there was this, okay, now we know you're a foreigner, or show me your ID, that sort of thing. So I had a couple of those incidents, but I think on the whole, and admittedly, I called it. I was one of those people that called it long before the election, saying, who's going to win, and these were the factors because a lot of the prep work was done 4 years ago, if you will, and it's something our politicians back home need to realize. I mean, my biggest criticism is you guys need to reduce your campaigning season. It's almost most of the election, most
Like
of
how
your
much
term.
to govern before the next campaign.
So that's something interesting, but I think we all experience the that people are concerned about each other, their families, their
Quality of life.
quality of life, that sort of thing. And Tanisha, for instance, did quite a few interviews around that, and Jasmine. And it ranges from perspective, but people, if you're promising people that they're going to have more money for the basics, they're more inclined to vote for you.
But
And
I
if
saw that conflict, like speaking to people, there was very left-leaning people who were in conflict between their values in certain spaces and their economical situation. And that was a theme that stood out for me, that, the economics of everyday life, the price of gas, bread and milk, really stood out. And at the same time, wanting their little girls to have sexual health rights that are not dictated by the government. So that conflict between certain Democratic Party values and Republican Party values and balancing it out when it got to the ballot, I think was a very difficult task for Americans in this election.
yeah, it's very well said. People, there was sort of a conflict between, personal protections that at this point we really don't know what's going to happen with a lot of the federal protections. States have been very active, especially the blue states have been very active in enshrining those protections. I know in New York, they passed the Proposition 1 amendment last week as part of the statewide ballot, that was a measure that was on the ballot, which now enshrines healthcare protections for women, among a number of other things, protections for minorities and migrant groups. On the federal level, that a lot of these things now kind of hang in the balance. Nobody really knows where they're going to go from here. You bring up also an interesting point about the length of the campaign season. We don't generally have campaigns that last this long. This is a relatively new phenomenon. Normally, the presidential campaign kind of gets started about a year to a year and a half before the actual election. So in the last two election cycles, things have begun earlier. How long does the election cycle in South Africa typically last from the times that the primaries begin to the final outcome?
Yeah, the president declares when the elections is going to happen, but we're not looking at more than 6 months.
The parties will have a policy conference and an elective conference. There will be a federal conference for like a national opposition, maybe if we're thinking about the two biggest parties, and a policy conference. And that will maybe be a year before the elections. But there's not much campaigning before then.
And even just before elections, campaigning needs to end. There needs to be final rallies, especially for us, for media as well. We're not allowed to air campaigns or air advertising at least 72 hours before. It's called the cooling off period.
Now, what does that provide? You call it a cooling off period. What's the value there?
Well, the logic behind it is to, because we come from such a such conflict background. It's designed to help, or it's supposed to help calm everybody down, and now we're heading into this election. So for us, it's about,
Cooling off.
cooling off and not getting violent or too emotional just before the elections.
Yes, something like that would probably be very useful here. I think that
Yeah, I think so too.
we generally have that 3 month, about 3.5 month period, or 2.5 month period between the election results coming in, which would have been last week, going into the inauguration on January 6th. It gives everybody kind of a chance at the federal level to get their ducks in a row, how the departments are going to be set up and make hires, and obviously also leadership changes, which a lot of that's happening right now. And it also does give people kind of a chance to get used to the concept that there's going to be some kind of transition. That period for us will be very interesting, because in the next 2 months, as we see who is being put into different positions of leadership, and as policy begins to become sort of rolled out ahead of January 6th, we'll have a chance to see, Americans will have a chance to see what exactly they bought. No pun intended, on November, on election day in November. So it's a very interesting kind of thing to see. In addition to being on the ground in DC talking about the election, what was your impression being in the capital of the United States? Just the overall impression of seeing what Washington, D.C. is all about. I mean, I know you guys got a pretty good look at New York City and, you know, being a commercial center of the United States, Washington is more of the political center. So what kind of vibe did DC give you guys? What did you notice about Washington, DC from a, you know, from a, just from a social perspective, a historical perspective? What were your thoughts?
Well, Mayor, I think that it almost seems like the elections didn't affect them at all. It just looked like a normal, continuous, everybody just continuing with their day-to-day life. sorry, we're in New York. As we were leaving on our way to Washington, we could actually like interacting with the people there. You could see that it affected them. People were sad. People started getting emotional when they responded to us and when we were asking them questions about how the elections affected them, or how they feel about the turnout of the elections. And that they're all sad. They were angry. But when we got here, it was like, hey, elections happen? When did elections take place? Which is very odd because I got the impression, you know, that when I get here, I'll be bumping into politicians wearing suits, you know, and it's all going to be still the elections ongoing, like there's still going to be a discussion. But yeah, no, it seems like all fun aside.
They did manage to see some of the cultural sites. Apparently, some reggae dancing and twerking on the floor was held last night.
Like the Rainbow Nation, we love it. Rainbows.
Yeah, that DC does have a very diverse cultural scene when it comes to that.
Absolutely.
And they've Washington DC is actually known for being a center of a number of American musical styles that have come out of DC. One of you know going back all the way into the you know to the 1700s. So it's interesting that you guys noticed that. To draw a comparison between what you guys may have in your capital in South Africa versus Washington, I mean, you have the same number of monuments and federal buildings, and you know, what's the scale of the national government in South Africa versus what you see in DC?
I think between Pretoria and Cape Town, it's very similar. I even told the group when we were traveling here that because we were colonized by the same people, we have very similar street names. Our architectural designs are similar, in the capitals, particularly Cape Town and Pretoria. I've seen so many names that are similar to the names of streets that are in South Africa. And I remember reading a very lengthy feature one day about how similar New York and other cities, New York City, was to Johannesburg and Cape Town and Pretoria because of the way the world was developing, you know, when people were arriving at different places and things were developing in certain spaces during certain ages. So there are remarkable similarities, and you know, when we see the war memorials and the historical sites, it looks a lot like, you know, parts of Cape Town and Pretoria.
Yeah, South Africa has three capital cities. So it's Pretoria, Cape Town, and Bloemfontein. So a lot of the memorials, like Tanisha was saying, you know, predate obviously 1994. There's been some updates, etc. And we see in Cape Town, you know, you have buildings designed under the British. In fact, our Parliament building was built under British colonialism. So yeah, we've got a rich that's sort of the buildings look the same in the city centre, especially the older buildings. But what we also find happening is sort of starting to reclaim some of our indigenous history and trying to slowly bring that into the city itself, because it's quite an ignored part of our history. You know, so we've seen the sort of the reclaiming of what was the Castle of Groop into quite a creative space, one artistic space as well as a historic space. So there's some reclaiming of those buildings and what you see, but generally for me, Washington is beautiful. I mean, sort of you know having an interest in politics, just walking around and seeing all the embassies and all of those things and restaurants called the Diplomat and all of
A living,
that.
breathing archive.
Yeah.
That's what I got out of Washington. It just has captured. There's so many museums and art spaces and monuments that you just like, if ever a city got it right to keep history alive, Washington did it.
Yeah, that's also a very interesting observation. Regardless of who's in power, I think that the Washington, D.C. has maintained itself as a sort of a recording place for the history of the United States, and in many cases, also the history of the world. And they've done that through public spaces like museums and also federally sponsored organizations, like, for example, the Museum of or the, there's the Museum of Archives. There's a Department of there's a department that keeps all sorts of different manuscripts, radio, television, and musical recordings as artifacts, and make sure that their historical significance is explained, for future generations. Because I think we do realize that keeping a recorded history of the world, especially as recorded histories could be manipulated or sometimes changed or removed, forgotten about. They've done a pretty good job of preserving a lot of those things. Again, regardless of who's in control, I think a lot of those things are enshrined. So I'm glad you guys were able to pick up on that. From a being there and kind of being part of the energy of Washington, D.C., did you guys see the same sort of enthusiasm for government and democracy that you would see in a place like Pretoria? Or Cape Town, or in a capital city, were there similarities? Were there things that struck you as being different?
Well, obviously, when we did the touristy thing today and tried to get a photo. Unfortunately, these guys all have faces for radio, so I struggled a bit to get a good picture of them in front of the White House. There's also obviously getting ready for the inauguration already.
He was also there.
So, in terms of people being enthusiastic about politics, I think it varies quite a bit. In front of the White House, we saw, a lot of different protesters, and we actually went around today. Our final audio piece and video piece is "What Does Democracy Mean to You?" I think that for us, to wrap up everything and to wrap up this experience for us, we went about asking people what does democracy mean to them, and obviously it's a bit difficult for me as an older activist, because the US is always seen as the boogeyman. And I think I told on one of the other interviews as well that I didn't really have an interest in coming to the US, but to see someone holding up a Palestinian flag in front of the White House and nobody jumping on him, and saying, "You're not allowed to do this." I think that part of freedom of expression. I remember my older mentor, who was in exile here, he always highlighted that as something that he's proud of his time in the US.
And it's worth being proud of.
And it is worth, I think Americans need to realize the value of that. And I think our own people back home need to understand what that means, because we still don't have that 100%.
Yeah.
And striking the balance between the two is not easy. And I think we always, rave about our constitution, but constitutions only work if you use them and if citizens are actually actively involved. So I think, yes, there needs to be quite a bit of education both here and back home about being involved in politics from a local level, from a council level, through to national government. And I think that's something Bush Radio in particular really wants to do quite a bit. And I think that was quite eye-opening and a good experience for us here. But we have to, and you guys here have to start getting people to take part actively. If whether it's for reproductive rights or the economy, it really needs to be a grassroots movement. And yeah, that would be my take on it.
And also, you just see that when you walk outside the White House and you see the activists standing there uninterrupted doing their thing, you realize why the First Amendment is the First Amendment and not the second, third, fourth, or fifth. And that stood out for me. And I realized why it was so important, because there was no one outside of the White House today who was standing with a placard or just, stating their personal activism or position on anything, who did not make sense, at least in a human rights perspective, or pointing out a position that was good for humanity as a whole, as opposed to who you are and I am and where you're from and what you do and what you believe. And that was special for me. And someone spoke to us today, and he really, really made me remember why the First Amendment is the First Amendment and not the second, third, or fourth.
Very true. The there have been attacks on the First Amendment continuously because it is an inconvenient position or inconvenient element for many campaigns or many politicians, because people do have the ability to say what they feel without any real penalty or repercussion, as long as it's within those those guidelines. It's not slanderous.
That's true.
And there's a lot of people on both sides that would like that little inconvenient piece regulated a little more heavily than it is. And as a broadcaster, I consider the First Amendment to be the most important piece of legislation that we have, because of the fact that it does protect the ability for people to say what they want to a large audience. So it's again very interesting that you folks picked up on that. Being at the White House, you had a chance to visit the White House today, right?
Yes, the outside, yeah.
Okay, what did you think? What was your takeaway? Did it seem like a palace? Did it seem like it had a gravity to it? What was your impression of being in that space? Because that's when people think about the president, they automatically associate those two things.
It was quite funny because we sent Jasmine out to do a bit of a recce because of all the setting up for the inauguration. So we were on the wrong side of it. Luckily, Jasmine tracked it down, and then Lydia took it a bit further.
Oh, wow. It was actually amazing because I only know the White House on movies, TV. So now being there and seeing it, it's right in front of my eyes, it was mind-blowing. I was like, wow. Actually, it's one of those most powerful places in the world. And now I get to experience that. It was amazing. And you, Jasmine, when you found it, what was your first thoughts? And yeah.
Okay, so firstly, when I got there, I was like, okay, what is happening here? Did I come all the way from South Africa just to look at polls being structured and so forth? And then, like Adrian said, I basically took a walk and I got to the other side where things are actually happening and a lot of tourists are taking pictures and feeling like they are a part of America and so forth. So that was quite interesting to see. It's just the fact that for picture quality, it doesn't give us that satisfaction that it's supposed to because of the gates that's so high. And knowing Jasmine, I like my pictures to be clear and so forth. So the gates is not doing it for me.
Basically, she needed like the
I
front door
want
to
it
be
open. I
inside.
want to feel that I am a part of the White House. I was there. So it doesn't technically feel to me like I was there.
She
I
needed
was
the
there
Oval
from a
Office
distance.
standing.
Yes.
That's very true. The years ago, you could get a lot closer to it. They didn't have all the barricades there, but that's people have been trying to, both on in movies and television and off, been trying to blow up the White House for a long time. So that's probably one of the reasons why they have that. Adrian, you had an interesting comment when you were on Arthur Idala's show on AM 970 last week on Friday, which I thought was very interesting, that when Arthur, who does he does the 6 o'clock show on 970, has a lot of listeners. He's a very Arthur's a very interesting guy in the way that he produces and presents his show, because he is kind of kind of centrist in his views on a conservative station, which I've always found fascinating that he can kind of reach across the aisle like that. You had said that if Trump was running in South Africa, that you thought he would actually win. What made you feel that way or think that?
Yeah, no, I'll probably get quite a bit of flack for that back home. But the reality is, you know, Trump appealed to people's pockets. The issue, whether you'll deliver or not, that's a matter of seeing. I think we've seen the rise of parties back home, like Umkhonto weSizwe party, which is led by former President Jacob Zuma. And the African National Congress got a shock this last election. I mean, they've lost their majority. And the reason for that is MK appeals to a very grassroots group of people. So, you know, Harris might be seen as a bit highbrow and get a lot of that sort of support. Trump, he could play to the masses, which is what he did here. And you'll do it quite well back home. So I know there'll be some people that would attack me for that. But, like I said, I called it long before October 5th. I mean, November 5th. So, yeah, he knows how to work a crowd. He knows how to, whether it's good or bad, as a journalist, that's not my judgment. But he knows how to appeal to the masses.
It's like bread and butter, from bread and butter to oil and mortar. And he somehow has, it feels like he's canvassed working class right up to, you know, Beverly Hills level. At least for us, that's how we...
Yeah, I mean, like I said, you know, I spoke to a black, gay, queer couple, and I was like, you know, making the assumption that they're going to add us, and they were like, no, well, actually, they're homeless living at this hotel, you know, in between, running between Wisconsin and New York, trying to find a place to stay, and they strong Trump supporters, they were trying to find... And it's not like they were, you know, anti-us as South Africans. I believe, you know, some of my guys went, you know, spent some time with them. Through to a mom in Harlem, you know, who was literally crying when Jasmine and Tanisha interviewed her. But again, it's bread and butter issues. And that we see all across the world. And it's definitely in South Africa. The ANC lost its majority. We now have a government of national unity, which basically means all the parties, well, a certain group of the parties that competed in elections actually govern the country. And it's very interesting back home politically, because now it's compromise. Every decision is compromise. Whether we'll be moving forward, you know, we don't know. But you also see it economically. As soon as Trump was announced...
the rand got weaker.
The rand got incredibly weak.
And we paid more for your dollars, Andy. Oh.
Well, that's definitely sorry about that.
So I was sort of hoping that, you know, but no, that night it shut. It started free falling against the dollar. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of, we ran into somebody from one of the car services, and they were also like, he was telling me, we need this back in Africa. And I was like, okay, you know, that it needs to happen back in Africa. So there's a mixed feeling of Trump, and Harris, unfortunately, we have sexism, which is still huge back home.
But you also had Becky come late to the party, yeah. Shame. And she was a woman. It just wasn't going to play out very well for her, at least in my personal opinion.
What endorsement? The celebrity endorsements.
That was a bit too much.
Because why are you bringing in celebrities? Like, I must now vote for you because Beyonce, for instance, is part of your team, or
They both had cheap tactics, not
both of them
really.
did it. And that is what most people had a problem with, because the people that I spoke with, that is what they highlighted. Because why are you bringing in celebrities?
I also
Because
heard the
at the end
influencer
of the
thing.
day, like, they are doing nothing for us. And the promises that was made during these rallies was not delivered on. Because even at the point it was said that Beyonce is gonna perform, and that is why people actually came out and I'm gonna vote for you because of A, B, and
Beyonce.
C. And then Beyonce was just there to show her face and then she left. So how does that actually make sense?
Give you credibility.
Yeah, and the other thing I also had a problem with is the voting poll stations that you can't find. It's not so visible. It's like you need to walk miles and miles, and no one knows where you actually vote.
And our reference point is Harlem, Andy, and we walk through the projects, but I can tell
So
you
that
that
reminds me of
Jasmine
home,
and
actually.
I walk a mile in anybody's shoes to walk those blocks because we really struggled to find voting stations. And we used Google Maps, but we eventually got there.
Yeah, that's often been a complaint, is that sometimes the polling places either change location or their people don't know where they're supposed to be. They show up and they're not, their names aren't there. So you guys are bringing up some real credible issues. Now, based on your experience here, what will you bring back to Cape Town now that you've been through this, and what things will you bring back to try to work with your local communities to have, if you've learned anything from your trip, what kind of stands out that you want to bring home with you?
I think everybody's kind of looking around. I think there's several aspects, both on a technical side as radio people and as media
So
people.
before you're gonna answer that, will you
Yeah.
bring back the studios that
Only one thing.
Yeah, so there was on that side, it was fascinating to see how you guys do a lot of recorded productions. And I personally think it ups the level of production quality. Everyone back home is obsessed with live radio. For me, out a way to do what we're doing, I think a bit better in terms of getting young people involved in civic education. Because we are doing it, but I think we can do a lot more. I think it's going to be very important for the future. So that's one side of it. I also think let's, start relooking at news and traditional news values. And I think with this team in particular, you'd see that. Some of the news, the Bush Radio stories that were done, we've had, serious stuff, we've had lighter stuff, but we have to get people interested in the news again, and that requires a lot of hard work. And we really enjoyed what WRHU is doing, and the campus stations we visited. I think that's important, and so we take away a lot of those basic production techniques and ideas as well. But I think for me, humans are humans, and that's always nice to see. We all have our humanity is bigger than the things that divide us. And so that will sort of be my very hippie peace and love message to everybody. But yeah, peace, love, and understanding is really what I think this trip has taught me on a personal level.
Andy, what stood out for me is, for the same reasons I think the Republican did such a red wash, and they did a lot of grassroots groundwork, and the Democratic Party might have been disadvantaged for a number of reasons. But I can make a comparison to journalism where if you do the groundwork and you actually talk to the people and you stop taking information from social media and you stop watching the big media channels on TV and taking your information from there, and you actually go and speak to the people, you will see how some of your perceptions and your ideas and stuff will be challenged almost immediately. You will speak to an immigrant in the United States of America who is rooting for a candidate whom you expect all immigrants to be against. You will speak to a an LGBTQI couple who you and expect to be leaning towards a certain side, but they're actually leaning towards the other side. And if you don't actually go out, walk the streets and do the groundwork, not only is democracy going to fail, journalism is going to fail.
Definitely. And then also what I basically will be taking home is the fact that this is not this is basically not an illusion, like the illusion that I have about America is this perfect country and everything is just smooth and so forth. And just to find out, they also have real life problems like all of us in South Africa. So that is what I'm taking home to basically show our people that maybe feels that South Africa, America is this fascinating country.
It's not
and
all James
progressive Paul. Country and so
in
forth.
Cocktails.
So they also have real life problems. They have the same problems that we have. So it's important for me to just bring that across also to our listeners that feels if you come from a different country, you don't know what struggles I've been going through. Because at the end of the day, they also go through the same struggles we go through, just in a different way.
And just before Renato gives his view and Lydia, Jasmine is actually also from DC. But not District of Columbia, an area called Dark City in Cape Town. So yes, Renato.
So what I'd like to take back is the timing situation. Like over here, people literally do things to the minute. Like when you see them take bus or when they take the train, as literally they grab the straps of the backpack or the bags and they run for it. Whereas when back home, when I say I'm 5 minutes away, you know, I haven't left my bed yet. so that is a little something.
And he says that because of this interview.
So that is something that I think we also need to work on, is the whole timing thing, because also we always have this joke with the churches back home, whereas our churches go on for hours and hours, because once people start talking, they just can't stop talking. And the second thing I would like to take back is the e-scooters and the e-bicycles. I'll be having sleepless nights. You know how nice that would be to just be able to hop off the bus or hop off the train, and it's still quite like, you know, about 20 minutes walk. I can just hop on a scooter and then I'll be at work.
Yeah. What? Time. You always throw one in the bag. Well, this has been very insightful, guys, and part of this partnership between Bush Radio and WRHU. It's amazing. I'm so glad you were able to join us for this, as crazy as it might have been, and you could take away a lot of interesting perspective, which I think is really important, especially as you bring what you've learned back to South Africa. Of course, we'll be coming to visit you guys in a couple of months, and I'm sure we'll be equally as surprised the things that we see when we're there. So we'll be looking forward to that. So thanks a lot, and we'll be hearing a lot more as we get into the next couple of months, and we'll have a chance to talk about it and see if our predictions are accurate or if we get surprised.
Well, you'll be coming to the sort of first State of the Nation address after our elections, our last elections. So it should be an interesting time. Just from our side, we'd also like to just thank the U.S. consulate specifically in Cape Town, Stacey Barrios and Nuran Schroeder for all their assistance in getting us here. I think that's important that we remember them. And, of course, Brenda and Andy, who initiated this entire exchange. Thank you very much, and all the people at WRHU as well.
Well, I can't tell you how pleased I am that you guys were here to be able to do this, and then we'll continue our collaboration as we get closer to our next meeting. So, once again, One World Radio on 89.5 FM, Bush Radio in Cape Town, South Africa, 88.7 FM, WRHU, Radio Hofstra University in New York. Take care, guys. Safe travels.
Thanks, bye.
89.5 FM.
FM 89.4.
On One World Radio, which is aired not only on WRHU at Hofstra University, but on Bush Radio over in South Africa. Well, Bush Radio has come to New York, so I'm very honored to be in studio today with Renato, with Lydia, and with Jasmine. Guys, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having
Thank
us.
You.
So tell me what's up. What brings you to New York this week?
The presidential election that is happening, I think in the next couple of days. So we're just here to do a little bit of coverage on that, plus also doing some cultural exchange, learning about, the American culture, and also trying to give some of our South African culture as well. We just learn from each other.
Yes, definitely. So that is why we came, because like Renato, my colleague, stated now, it is an exchange program with WRHU. So that is basically the show that Lydia also hosts with Andy. So that's technically how we got here, by meeting Andy, and Andy arranged all of this. So we are here to cover the presidential elections.
Lydia, how cool is One World Radio, and what's that like hosting it?
Oh, it's absolutely amazing. Andy is some other person. It's absolutely amazing. With Andy, Cody, and Richard as well. Yes, so it's been fun. It's been wow. I've been learning a lot from them as well. That's what I can say. It's been amazing.
Does it hit you that you guys are making a difference with that show? I mean, there are so many wide variety of topics you guys discuss on that show.
Yeah, we do, hey? And, the feedback, it's shocking, because I'm like, okay, I'm just doing a show. I don't know that there are people that are listening, and they're like, oh, wow, this is happening. This is, so I'm actually happy about it.
Well, I've had discussion on adaptability and accessibility. I know that's kind of a topic you guys still deal with today, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm.
So being in New York, and then you're going to go visit WRHU, but broadcasting out of South Africa, what's that experience like? And are there any tech challenges being, as I like to say, transcontinental between here and Long Island? Any tech challenges, or how does that all work out?
So when it comes to tech challenges, that's why Renato is here to touch on that, because if there's an issue with broadcasting or we go off air, this is the guy that needs to sort it out and make sure that we're back on air.
Oh, so it is a little bit difficult with all technical issues, and that was one of the things that I've learned coming here, is that there's not that much big of a difference from what happens here and what happens back home. The same issues here, computer gives up on us and we need to run around. So fortunately, you just have an engineer on hand, somebody that can fix this. Our skills only go to a certain limit, and then we have to get in extra resources that will assist us, but most of the time, yeah, no, it's either computer giving up on us, somebody maybe pressing the wrong button, and us just trying to figure out where is the problem coming from.
I also want to give a shout out to Adrian, the leader of the pack here with us today, bringing you guys to studio. Now, I understand the studio space might be a little different than here. Tell us about the studio space that you guys broadcast out of.
Okay, we actually have a nice studio.
What do you mean we actually have a nice? We have a very nice studio.
No, because I was going on. So we have the production studio, which is basically the alternative if anything goes
wrong.
Our backup
studio. Mm-hmm.
So that is the studio. And yeah, Jasmine is not such a fan of that studio. She likes the main studio, because there you can be yourself. You know what happens in studio. And it's quite easy to adapt in the main studio if problem basically arises. So yeah,
I was gonna say, so judging from the spaces over here in America, well, in New York, the studio space is a lot smaller than what we have at home. Mm-hmm. So we'd all be sitting around the same size desk. Like, I mean, I can reach over and I can grab you.
Okay.
Whereas back home, we have quite a big desk. So there is quite a distance between us and the guests. And the space is massive. It's like, I think most of the space is being taken up by the desk. But that also has all the equipment that's in there. So some of the equipment we share is still also in the studio. I see there's server rooms, massive server rooms.
Yeah.
I walk in there and I get a headache. I'm like, I thought I was technically inclined until I walked into this room. And it's like, this is something completely different. But our studio space is very, very nice. It's very spacious. Yeah, it's like we can all hold hands. So it's like one big happy family.
Definitely. And also on that, we technically engineer for ourselves. We don't have someone that engineers. So I don't need to call Renato and say, Renato, my case is on air. Can you put us on air and so forth? I deal with everything as I go along, do the interview, take calls.
Everything.
Do,
yeah, because
engineer,
everything
training.
At once, play music, whatever it is.
Call screening, running out of studio to go outside and get a call. Learn everything.
So you hands on technically by our studio. And like Renato said, about the safety, like Jazz Nini's a So the studio, like the desk is very broad. It's big. So there's no way someone can reach me. So yeah, safety first.
Well, tell me about how you guys got into radio. Maybe Adrian can give us one comment today while he's here. How you guys all got into radio over in South Africa.
Well, for me, it was interesting because I came in to join with technical and learn about the technical side of things. I was assisting producing one of the morning crew show, or the morning show, which is called the morning cruise. I done two segments on the show where I had to use my voice for the segment. So I done it pre-recorded, and then people were just like, you have a nice voice, would you like to do a show? And me being all excited is like, yes, it's gonna be awesome, I'm gonna be, you know, on the big stage. And then I had a show, I don't have a show, put me on a show and like, look, so you're gonna do the back chat show? And like, yeah, the preparation work was not what I signed up for.
How old are you, by the way?
I am 25 years old.
Okay. Well, it's great to see that radio is still alive in the generations of the 20s and you know, late teens, because sometimes there's this idea that radio is going away. I don't think it's going away because they've got generations of people who want to continue this. Right, Lydia?
Yeah, that is so true, you know. So with me, when I got into radio, a friend of mine was like, you know what, Bush Radio is running in internship, you should try it out, you got a nice voice. I'm like, ah, really? I will. And then I did, and here I am. And I still need to ask Adrian how, why, because I butchered that interview. I don't know what I said during that interview, because here I am now sitting with you,
and Adrian's right here.
Yeah, I thought I'd grab the opportunity. I think I also need to say thanks to the U.S. consulate in Cape Town, because they really made this entire trip possible. So yeah, I'm the old guy in the group. I've been doing this since 1993. I started my journalism career with Bush Radio. Managed to spend some time away from the station and enjoyed. But yeah, you were talking about radio being, you know, radio is still an intimate medium. And what is so important in South Africa is that it speaks to people's souls. People have access to it. You know, we've got a lot of challenges back home, power, etc. And the radio is your friend. So it's still that intimate medium. It's still, you know, we encourage people to talk to one person. That sort of thing is incredibly important for it. You know, the team we have here, they were selected. They had to go through a process. All of that, Brendan and myself put them through quite a rigorous and stressful process. But they all represent what is possible with a station like Bush. And I think a station like Bush represents hope. It represents what's possible. It's one of the reasons we do the show with Andy and One World Radio.
Sure, sure.
You know, it's bringing people together and building bridges between communities. And this is merely an extension of that as well. You know, these guys are seeing New York, experiencing New York, you know, the food, the prices, getting used to general sales tax, and, sure, you know, remembering add that, and remembering wherever you go, the bank charges are different and taxes are different. All of those, that's all mind-blowing for us. So for me, I've been doing a lot of, go out, speak to that person. Stop them on the
connecting
street.
Connecting is so huge, right?
I mean, and New Yorkers, firstly, I feel so at home. I mean, I've been lucky with Bush Radio to travel to several countries all over the world. My first time in the U.S. I think I may have found home. I can understand why there's so many ex-Bush people here in New York. We've got somebody at the UN Communications. We've got somebody at the World Bank. There's so many Bush Radio people that live here now.
See, that's a cool factoid. I got to ask this, though. To bring the news to Cape Town and to South Africa must mean something to all of you, right? I mean, are you one of the only stations out there?
No, we've got 75 community radio stations nationally, more than 75. That's great. But I think stations like Bush, and I don't want to speak, you know, we've been going on this old joke about not tooting our own
horns. All right, talk yourself up. Come on now. But this is why you're here.
Bush Radio in 2024 remains one of the last stations that doesn't serve a political master, doesn't serve a religious master, and doesn't service a commercial master. Yeah, the last true independent voice, independent media voice in South Africa.
Well, I'm so honored that you guys joined me. And then Jasmine, how did you get into this whole medium that we love called radio?
Okay, so firstly, I'm going to correct you on my name because I'm very fussy about my name. It's Jasmine with the N and not the M. So for me, it was when I was small, I always wanted to be on TV. And as I grew up, I felt like it's too hard to maintain because it takes too much effort. Because you're in front of a screen, a camera all day, so that's not going to work. And that's how I eventually... got into radio when I did a learnership program. And from there, because through that learnership, I ended up at Bush Radio, where I'm still at. And I always felt like I wanted to make a difference in our community because I come from a high-risk, gangsterism, social ills-infected community. So through what I'm doing, I'm able to reach at least one person and change their lives. So that is... a feel good for me, showing me that I'm actually making a difference in my own community and inspiring the next young Jasmine arising.
I love that. All right, finally, you're here to cover the election. So I got to say, for those who want a different take on the election to choose Bush Radio, how are you guys going to report and what time can we listen to your report on our elections tomorrow night?
Okay, so currently we are putting, as we go along, we are doing using social media as a platform and putting the content and what we've done so far. We basically put it on there so people can go via there. Alternatively,
we'll be filing our live reports at midnight, hopefully getting it there early morning on our side so that people can actually have a listen and stay in touch and also hopefully be part of the crazy that we don't feel alone.
So I think the best way is to go via Bush Radio's website, which is www.bushradio.co.za. All the information will be there because there is a time difference. That is the best method to use to get all the information. Yeah, because it's going to be later in South Africa. So technically, it's old news in South Africa once it comes there. But for them, it will feel like fresh new news. So that is the platform that they can use to get all that information from.
Very cool. Yeah, I think we're all tired of our media. Well, why don't we hear how Cape Town is reporting our election? I'd love to get that take. So maybe I'll tune in tomorrow at midnight. How about that?
Mm-hmm. Please do.
All right, thanks guys for joining the One Leg Up Network. I'm Alex Garrett with the team from Bush Radio from Cape Town, South Africa.
You've been listening to One World Radio, a collaboration between 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa, and 88.7 FM WRHU Radio Hofstra University, Hempstead, New York. We thank you for joining us and look forward to seeing you next week as we celebrate the power of radio in our one world. Tot ziens, jylle.
Have to fight back, defend all your rights, and understand that if done collectively, it is more powerful than if it's done by one person. Collective, collegial ways of thinking creates a solidarity which is absolutely necessary if our world is going to move forward. We have to fight to make things better.
That's Tariq Ali, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamyan. This edition of AR features Tariq Ali on You Have to Fight Back. When faced with adversity, one can look away and do nothing. But for our own dignity and self-respect, we must fight back and resist the depredations of the state and corporate sector. Historically speaking, this is one of those critical inflection points. A lot of people are deeply concerned about the Trump regime and Elon Musk. The social safety net is being shredded while the gazillionaires make out like bandits. Tariq Ali says, what the United States needs today is an opposition which fights back politically, intellectually, and culturally with arguments and, when necessary, comes out on the streets to defend democracy, a grassroots uprising. We need activists more than ever before. Our guest today is Tariq Ali, an internationally renowned historian and activist. He was born in Lahore, Pakistan. For many years, he has been based in London, where he's an editor of New Left Review. He's the author of many books. His latest is You Can't Please All. In February, he gave the Dr. Abdul Lodi Lecture on Human Rights at the University of St. Thomas in Fredericton, New Brunswick, Canada. And now, Tariq Ali, You Have to Fight Back.
Let me start with the following quote. I think it was in 1936 or 37 that an U.S. journalist from Life magazine, who was a photographer as well, visited India and got an interview with Mahatma Gandhi, the nationalist leader of the Indian people. And the first question she asked him was, what do you think of Western civilization? And Gandhi replied in a very soft voice, it would be a good idea. And I've never forgotten that. I read it ages and ages ago. It made me smile because Gandhi was not someone who had a great sense of humor. I mean, he could be witty. But this was, I thought, a classic remark. Now, what I want to say to you, that civilizations and what